Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to Following On County Cricketer, a weekly podcast from TalkSport and The Cricketer magazine. I'm John Norman from TalkSport, and every Thursday joined by two-time county championship winner Steve Harmison, as well as George DeBell and Nick Friend from thecricketer.com. This week, we're going to be looking back at the county championship action. Featured some terrific games across the two divisions. We will discuss whether Middlesex are really about to step away from Lords and ask why, after years of inaction, some counties are suddenly up in arms about not being awarded a Tier 1 women's county team. If you like what you hear, please take the time to leave a 5-star review on the podcast page and follow on Twitter or X at cricket_TS. And for even more content, head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and hit subscribe. But for now, thanks for listening to Following On County Cricketer. Okay, guys, we're back. George and Nick from Cricketer, The Cricketer. Head over to the website. Steve Harmison from Lanzarote. Looking very, very well. Smart haircut, little bit of a tan, and a bit of cricket time for the next half an hour or so. And guys, we've actually got some positive results to look back on. Last week, there was one win from the first two rounds of the county championship. And if you believe some, that's glorious. Personally, it does make our jobs a little bit easier because for the next 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about not one, not two, not three, not four, but five. Five wins stroke losses and some interesting draws as well. Some really, really entertaining cricket. Where shall we start? Shall we start at the top? Shall we start with Essex? Neil Manthorpe's tip for the title at the start of the season over on the Following On podcast. Again, very, very impressive, dismantling Lancashire, swatting them aside, and they're setting up what should be a really intriguing match this week as well, where they take on Durham, I think. Yeah, yeah. Durham versus Essex, that should be a crackerjack, and it's at the Riverside as well. Who wants to start? Should we start with you, Nick? I know you're at Lords. Oh. We need to talk about Yorkshire as well. By the way, they went down to defeat. Essex. I mean, where do you go? Where do you start? We've kind of talked about some of their key performers so far this season already, but that was a seriously impressive display, primarily with ball, but also with bat, and they're looking pretty good at the top of the table.
No, very good. They always are, of course. They, Sire have won two in a row, but Essex won two of the three before that, and. I remember speaking to A.D. Birrell down at Hampshire before the season started, and he sort of asked them how how Hampshire could break the hoodoo in their search for elusive title. And he mentioned Surrey, and he initially forgot to mention Essex as sort of the examples to follow. And when Essex popped back into his mind, he was very, very insistent that they shouldn't be lost in whatever piece I was writing, because as he said, they have found a way of winning it. And their way of winning it historically has been obviously to a point, sort of not reliant, but heavily involving Simon Harmer. I think possibly the really interesting thing for these first few weeks is that I think Harmer's taken something like, is it six wickets in three games, I think? And obviously they've missed out on Sam Cook at in the second game, who again, sorry, the second game against Kent, he missed that one on the back of his 10 from the first game. They're winning games essentially without, say, without, was he Cook, sorry, the Cook game was a draw, the Kent game was a draw, but they've won two out of three without Harmar having a major impact. And they've strengthened in areas where they needed to strengthen. I mean, obviously, losing Alistair Cook and Dan Lawrence could have been pretty, should have been pretty large for them. But they've, you'd say, in Dean Elgar, they replaced him with probably the most like-for-like option out there in terms of high-class or old-fashioned left-handed sort of nutty opener. And in Jordan Cox, they've brought someone in who felt like had a bit of points prove, to know, very high ceiling, all that stuff. And he started brilliantly. I mean, they've been, and they've done that without three keepers, haven't they? They keep on thinking right and saying they've lost Pepper. Is it Pepper, Rossington? And who's the other keeper who's injured himself? And someone else whose name is escaping me, I think. But yeah,
yeah,
they keep
you're on your own there, Nick.
But yeah, they ended up with an academy lads, 12th man keeping for them at Lancs for a bit of that. They've just been very good. But as I say, probably shouldn't be surprised, because if you take Surrey's dominance the last couple of years out of it, I mean, Essex were their closest challenges last year. And you say, obviously, Neil's tipping to do that again, if not go one better. And you wouldn't be surprised if they did. I mean, they found a way of taking 20 wickets and scoring off runs, which is the game.
It is. Harmy, yeah. Durham with their first win in Division One cricket for some time. Must admit, I was about to send the County Cricketer WhatsApp group a little message when you were 141 for seven against Worcestershire in first innings. But he came back, 244, and then reduced Worcestershire. They were bowled them out of 184. Scott Boland is going to miss the rest of the season. Peter Siddall is going to come in. But yeah, a relieved man, I guess, as you jetted off for your holiday, that Durham are up and running.
Yeah, they're up and running. Again, you know, there's a lot of talk about giving the big build-up, Boland, Carson and Potts. And, you know, Ben Rayne will never let anybody down, you know, whether he was at Leicester. When he left Durham, went to Leicester and then gone back to Durham, he's done brilliantly with both bat and ball. He's dangerous at that number nine slot with a bat, and as well with the ball. Potts just coming into his own. Remember that Durham didn't play in the first game, so they were a game behind when it comes to, you know, miles in their legs and everything that went with it. I wasn't there, so I don't know what the surface was like down at Kidderminster, but it looked as though it had a little bit of early doors, and I think class came through. I think there's probably, I'm not saying there's one class player in that top six on both sides, but there's somebody I think is a class apart, and that's David Beddingham. And over the winter, got his chance to play for South Africa, and I think he's, when you do go into international cricket, your standards get raised even more. And I think he's come back into Durham. I spoke to him at the Hall of Fame dinner, and he said what a great winter he had, and he feels in good nick. He had landed the day before, looking forward to the season starting. And I think George seen him last week and mentioned how good he looked, and again, you know, the footage and the highlights I see, he is a class player, is David Beddingham. If South Africa don't want him, I don't think you'll get Durham members arguing about where he should stay for the rest of his career, because a bit like Dale Benkenstein, when Benke came over, when South Africa closed the door a little bit on him, Benke was brilliant for Durham County Cricket Club, and hopefully Beddingham is going to do the same for a long time to come. But special mention for Coughlin. His career took a nosedive when he went in knots because of injury, and he's slowly but surely bouncing back. And I think because of the seamers that Durham have got and the rotation that they're going to have, that's probably better for Coughlin rather than saying, you know, we have to rely on Paul Coughlin. I think you'll get more product out of him if he plays a game, misses a game, plays a game because of the bowlers they've got. And stays fit, because obviously his body's not, you know, his body's been struggling with injuries over the last few years, but another quality performer.
George, there's a story this week in the Times about Middlesex moving away from Lords for the first time in 160 years, I think.
Yeah, well, just I mean, the headline said that. Did the story. So
a little bit. Well, I couldn't quite work it out. I read it and I was like, I can't really work out how that work as well, to be honest.
And then then Middlesex put out a statement saying, actually, we're not moving away from Lords, but they will play games, as they have done since the dawn of time, elsewhere. So I didn't think that was anything to get particularly excited by, to be honest. Middlesex have a they're almost a wandering side, aren't they? But they're going to play their big games and probably their early season games. And Nick and I, well, I only did a day of that a game against Yorkshire on Friday, and there was a really, really good attendance, actually, I thought, at Lords. Maybe attracted by Joe Root and Harry Brook. I don't know, but.
They brought 500 school kids down as well,
right?
Which is great.
To slowly freeze to death one by one.
To be fair, it's like the first day of summer. It was kind of nice, and I'll tell you how much of a thaw there was. I had a drink in the committee room with Colin Graves.
Get out!
That is something that happened, and we found things that we agreed on.
Go on.
Not masses of things.
Give us one thing.
Glamorgan, and the tier one teams.
It's a bit like meeting an ex girlfriend's new boyfriend, isn't it?
No. Anyway, there was.
Is it like meeting your new girlfriend's old boyfriend?
I mean, I don't know. We haven't WhatsApped since or anything. But anyway, it was only just a throwaway comment, really. I was just, suggest that for a day there, it did actually feel quite sunny. Actually, Saturday, I was at Kidderminster. I saw Beddingham's 100, which was excellent. I mean, you know, a class above, as Harmy says. He looked really, really good. And I think I'm right in saying Durham and Essex, teams we've been talking about, are playing this weekend, aren't they? Which looks like an early 48. No, it's a real good barometer of where the season might go already, and that's quite exciting. So they do look, as Harmy said, you know, Durham a really, really good side. And it's interesting that it was the players that we maybe weren't talking about so much at the start of the season. I mean, as he says, Coughlin is a terrific bowler, had a miserable time at Notts, but he's got, I don't know, he seems to get surprising bounce very regularly. He gets lift, doesn't he, Harmy? I don't know that he measures particularly high, particularly quick, but can't remember, one of the batters he hit on the helmet and the ball went on to hit the stumps, and he completely deceived him with the bounce, and that's what he does get lift and bounce, and he bowls good areas, and he made a pitch that looked very, very sluggish when Worcestershire were bowling. Look as if it had a little bit of something in it. I mean, it's obviously, it's a club wicket. It was a terrific wicket, bearing in mind everything that's happened. But you wouldn't expect it to be, you know, the whacker. Anyway, Durham, as Harmy says, looked as if they were up to speed after a slow start to the season. Understandably slow, that's not a criticism. And I think they really will be contenders, but it goes up a level this weekend when they play Essex. It's the first really good test of where they are, probably.
I've got a question for you, Harmy, because I remember when I was growing up and Surrey had a lot of players who represented England. They had a very successful county side. And then the England players would come back, usually towards the back end of a tournament, the Benson Hedges Cup or the county championship or whatever. And you kind of think that it would strengthen the side, but in a way it destabilised things. And it's not as though, you know, the likes of Alex Stewart, Mark Butcher and Graham Thorpe and whoever, Alex Tude, whoever, coming back into the side necessarily strengthened things. I don't know what you think about it, because Yorkshire, everybody, yourself included, expected them to get off to an absolute flyer with their England players in the side. But as someone who would have come in and out of the Durham side when you were or weren't playing for England, and coming up through the ranks, you would have seen these players go off and come back. Can it be a little bit destabilising? Does it affect the team kind of like ethos or the spirit in the camp that these guys come back in and out? How did it used to work for you at Durham?
It depends on who you are and what you know, what characters you're bringing back in. If you look at Durham's even from years ago and now, they're pretty similar. You know, Mark Wood, Mark Wood's not going to play, but Ben Stokes is. But if you're bringing Mark Wood and Ben Stokes into the group, you know, the characters that Mark Wood and Ben Stokes are, you know, Ben, Ben itself, England captain, but Ben, he still lives close to all the lads. He's still, you know, really, really close to all, you know, the group. So I don't think it'll be, it wouldn't be a huge transition where people look around the dressing room and go, oh, there's Ben Stokes. You know, they see him all the time. And the same with Mark. Mark's an infectious character. I was the same. Me and Collie were the ones that came back in all them years ago. So it depends who you are. The volume that Surrey probably had possibly destabilised them because they were bringing five, sometimes six players back from England to go into that group. That destabilizes anything. So, and it depends on the people and the characters that you bring in. So I don't think it would be too much of a problem if Ben Stokes and Mark Wood became available that slot into the group. I think Brian Campbell and Marcus North would look at it as a way of protecting the likes of Coughlin, or if it's Potts' week off for Wood to play, or if it's Carson's week off for Wood to play. I think it will be. I don't think it's going to be just thrust upon them. Right, you've got them for next week. You have to play them, because sometimes that's what happened with the England of bygone years, where finish a test match, teams would go, coaches would go, well, Alex Stewart might need some runs, or Graham Thorpe might need some runs, so throw him back into first class cricket. You've got 3 days to pick a group that might destabilise. I think in the modern day now, I think the roadmap's pretty much there for the counties to know that when their England players are going to be available. And I think they were told a long, long time ago that, you know, these players would be available for these certain weeks. And I think the counties, you know, plan for that occasion. But it comes back to the character. I don't think Ben Stokes or Mark Wood would destabilise Durham, not one bit.
No, I don't think Root and Brooke destabilise Yorkshire.
No, I think, no.
Not at all. I mean, they just nicked off. It happens. They're probably not looking at that game as the game that they have to be ready for. You know, they both had a bit of time off. I just wouldn't read anything into it at all. It just... Middlesex got in good areas and batters nicked off. I mean, I think
Yorkshire struggled for bowlers. I think the biggest...
Yeah, Yorkshire are three down bowlers. Already.
Yeah,
Yorkshire lost Milnes, Fisher and Mickey Edwards in space of 3 weeks. I mean, I've watched them twice in a row. I was at Bristol for their game last week, and as George says, like, if Joe Root scored 250 next week, he wouldn't learn anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's Joe Root. I almost think the thing that they can do most, I almost think the thing that's most impressive in those games, in these games, particularly for Root, less so for Brooke, but you've only got to be around Joe Root at these games to realise how impressive he is, if that makes sense. Like, it's not the run so much. Everyone knows. You know, I was slightly disappointed by the attendance at Bristol, particularly when Brooke and Root were batting, both on, I think it was on a Friday and on a Sunday. You know, when people are rightly complaining late this summer about test prices, it does feel slightly like a missed opportunity when on a Sunday afternoon you've got so many empty seats to watch, you know, the best player of his generation and possibly the best player of his next generation batting together. But Root's on Sunday at Bristol, so it's about a week and a half ago now. So we're strangled down the leg side for 50 odds, frustrated, blah, 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 all the usuals. And there's that bit of Bristol, I don't know if you can picture it, where it's sort of not players' area. It's the bit between the between the pavilion and the entrance to the field. It's effectively no man's land. There's this one little kid waiting at the entrance to the pitch with a boundary sign. Root is walking off the field, helmet still on, gloves still on. And I've played with club cricketers who would tell that five-year-old where to go. but Root, like, literally, helmet still on, put his bat under his arm for a second, grabbed the pen in his glove, had a nice little chat with his kid, signed his autograph, went back upstairs. And I reckon those two guys, in the course of that game, and then round the back of the pavilion at Lords for last week, and then in the Lords Tavern, I suspect, afterwards as well, at the end of the game, will have signed and posed for so many photos and autographs. I know it comes to the territory. I know it's stuff that we just, you know, take for granted and stuff. But I don't know. I thought they were really impressive in how they did that. I know it counts for nothing. So I know it counts for something. I know is, you know, everyone always says this stuff. But when you watch them do it, like Brooke's warm up effectively for day one at Bristol was just signing autographs, and so there is a role to play. Whether they'll score runs or not, you know, Rob Key's made it pretty clear he's not going to judge these guys on what they're doing a few weeks in the championship. Zach Crawley obviously returned for Kent as well, I think he made 5-4. But, you know, Zach has said himself a lot of times before that that will not concern him. Ultimately, they've got to be ready for, certainly Root and Crawley have to be ready for July, don't they? Really, so loads of time.
Well, what does that mean? If there's a player out there, and there are several, aren't there?
Well,
who are just knocking the door down in terms of...
No, absolutely. I'd agree. But of course. But we're talking specifically about Joe Root, Harry Brook, and Zach Crawley after the 12 months, he says.
No, all of them. You could go through all of them. It doesn't look at all easy to get into that side.
No.
But you never know if someone could...
But I think you'd say there's probably slightly less certainty around all of the spots than there maybe was 12 months ago. Or no, maybe not 12 months ago. But it does feel like there might be a spot for a select group who, granted, they're probably picking from. I don't think it's a free-for-all. But, you know, we obviously a lot of talk about the keeping spot and therefore, I guess, by extension, sort of that 6-7 spot, potentially. And as Josh Tung showed last year, there is probably a spot for someone to come through and bowl quickly for...
Oh, sure. The bowlers, there is. There's always...
I think there's potentially a batting spot. But I think that the difference...
He's got to have gloves on and not batting gloves. The top six are nailed on. There's no...
Is there an argument for having a look or keeping an open mind for number three? I mean, Ollie Pope obviously played a great innings in Hyderabad. There's no way around it. It was a magnificent innings, and I think everyone would accept his potential. But he has played ballpark 45 tests. He does average 32-ish. Don't know. I mean, I think he would be the first to admit, I'm sure he would, that, you know, he hasn't found the consistency yet. And it's absolutely right that they're bearing with him and he's got a very high ceiling and all the rest of it. But at some stage, you know, you do have to deliver. But you could argue he did deliver 5 tests ago. And I'm just saying that... There's a balance, isn't there, between giving people some security in the side, but not allowing it to become a closed shop because teams always need to refresh and change. It's not like that. They are bottom of the World Test Championship. I mean, we shouldn't think that there can't be a way in for people. But I agree with you. The most obvious way in, it's ridiculous, is as a batter who keeps, even though... I think we've just seen a wicketkeeper keep as well as I've ever seen anyone keep. It's in India, but there we are.
So, to clarify, I think there probably is a way in, but what I mean is it's not a free-for-all. I don't think this is... I think whereas in the past you might have had, you know, you start the season, if someone knocks the door down, you might not have been thinking about them 3 months ago. I don't necessarily... You know, I feel like if there is a way in, it's a way in for a select group who are already on the radar.
Sure.
I agree what you're saying about Ollie Pope. I really do. But the way Ben speaks in press conferences about decision-making, he always mentions Pope. I think the way Pope is seen in this group as a future captain and a vice-captain, future captain, ceiling level, everything that goes with it. I think he unfortunately wants to bat where everybody else wants to bat, which is probably 4 or 5, but he's taking one for the team, batting at 3, and I think that goes in his favour. I agree, 45 test matches having 32 is probably not good enough, but I think the way they see him in the camp and the way Ben and Brendan use him as decision-making, I don't think Ollie Pope's going anywhere. I think the one that they have to look at, and I think we spoke brilliantly about it last week, the more I went away last week after the conversation George and John we had about Joe Clark, and another one that came up this week, 230 not out. He's not going away. He's been keeping wicket for knots. I think he's the one. I think if we want to talk about, if we want to say what we've just been saying, somebody coming out of the 5, 6, 7 first-class matches of 4 and bringing the door down, I think the one that's bringing the door down at the minute is Joe Clark to bat at number 7 and potentially keep wicket, which I don't think many people seen that coming from 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
What about Alex Davis? He's not keeping at the moment, is he? But he's averaging 260 something,
and he's batting really well. He's not keeping, no. I mean, and in some ways he fits the mould of what they want, but I think he's a long way away. And actually, I think
but also you shouldn't be. And this is probably why it's probably slightly early to be talking about this kind of thing, because the first test is in July, and really we have three games down, two of which we play with the Kookaburra on pretty, you know, benign surfaces, and we've got something like 14 players in the championship averaging north of 100. Like on that, I mean, I think I'm just scrolling up the list here. You've got
there's one scoring runs and he's not playing the championship, and I think he is well in the mix for batting at number seven and keeping wicket for England, and that's Phil Salt.
I didn't say Josh Butler.
No, I think Phil Salt.
We've done this one, haven't we?
No, I think he's. I think he is well on England's radar.
I agree.
Does that mean that Johnny Bairstow isn't?
Well, I think Johnny Bairstow's got a bit of a fight to get his place. I think Ben Foulkes has got a huge fight to keep his place. Ollie Robinson, you seen him last week, George, underneath the radar a little bit. There's one or two. Smith, Cox is not keeping for Essex, but I think if I was him and he wanted to play for England, I'd put the gloves back on, because that, for me, is the only place you can get a game for England at this moment in time, barring a finger injury.
I was going to say, you say there's no changes in the top six, but of course there will be one change, won't they? Because Brooke will come back and they've got a decision to make.
Yeah, but the keeper's changing. That's the greatest.
Yeah. But the top six will change. And of course, Duckett and Crawley did average, 50 for the first wicket. Ollie Pope's vice-captain. Joe Root's not going anywhere. Ben Stokes is the captain.
But you say not going anywhere. You know, I should clarify, I've just looked up. Ollie Pope's averaging 34 and he's played 43 tests. So I've done him a wee bit of a disservice there. But we saw Shoaib Bashir take his chance in the winter, didn't we, when Leach was injured. Mm. And injuries do happen. It's how people take opportunities.
Of course.
And it's not at all... obviously, people could, break a finger at any stage.
Mm.
And I guess players need to put themselves in pole position. I think with Davies, for example, one of the reasons that it was the right time to make him captain is that probably his personal England ambitions had all but gone. Realistically, and he's got a different thing which seems to be focusing his mind, different motivations, different responsibilities, seems to be bringing the best out of him. I thought it had gone with Joe Clark. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a possibility at this stage of his career, but I thought it had just about gone. And maybe he's timing this run of form right, but he'll have to keep going. Look, I'm seeing that game this week, I think. We'll see him keep, which I'm not positive I've done before. But there's not much doubt that of his quality as a batter. It's very, very high class. And it's interesting that he keeps doing it. It's interesting that the scores are big. You know, it doesn't matter. Most batting records occur on flat wickets, naturally. But it's showing great determination, great concentration. I don't think anyone's ever doubted the raw skills. It's about putting it together, and he's doing that. And if he does that for any period of time, he will be in the mix, yeah.
Can I just mention that the Cricketer magazine is committed to having reporters on the ground at every round of county fixtures this summer, and that commitment was, of course, recently recognised about a month ago. It was named the best place to read about the county game online. That is the sixth year in a row, by the way, at the ECB's Domestic Cricket Journalism Awards. So for award-winning news and analysis about all 18 counties, all year round, and plenty more, of course, head to thecricketer.com/subscriptions and sign up now for just £3.99 a month, which is less than a cup of coffee in some London coffee shops.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
By the way, asking if we got any feedback last week about that conversation.
Yeah, I was just about to ask it, so you go for it.
I did get a little. There were conversations afterwards with two female cricket journalists, quite well-known ones. I don't think it would be particularly fair to name them, and they disagreed with each other. So, and there was a conversation with a fellow journalist who said he had never heard me sound so uncomfortable during that conversation. But
was that before or after you spoke to Colin Graves at the weekend?
Can't remember. It was, no one said that we shouldn't have covered it.
Yeah, and it is uncomfortable. This is the thing, right? It is a really uncomfortable conversation to have. So it is, and it's not like, see, the way that
that shouldn't be the reason why they don't pick
No, it isn't. But we're talking about it, right? And the problem that you have in the media is that, unlike a normal conversation in the pub, where a group of friends will sit around the table and essentially you start having a disagreement, and essentially the journey to having an opinion is that argument. And very often at the end of the argument or discussion, you've changed your mind or you've modified your thoughts. Or sometimes what happens is, because you're arguing with someone you don't want to agree with, normally a relation, you will absolutely steadfastly refuse to change your opinion. But then after the conversation is taking place, actually, you do start modifying things and you do change your mind. And that is essentially what we're trying to do with this conversation, because it's not like we have got the finishing point ready in our minds. We're kind of a bit unsure ourselves. It's an uncomfortable, horrible situation. And when none of us are 100% sure, to be honest with you, I wouldn't really want to be a selector in this situation, but it's a conversation that we're having. And I appreciate the fact that people are listening, and instead of just jumping down our throats, they're actually aware that it is a really, really complicated tale. So I'm pleased that you did get some feedback, George. It's good to hear. And I hate to, and I'm really sorry, but we're running out of time. And I hate to segue between this situation and the fact that there was a massive story this week. But in the last 7 days, the awarding of 8 county tier one teams to professionalise the women's game, to improve the women's game. And there were some big counties that were pretty hacked off that they weren't awarded these teams. Yorkshire, very, very strong and angry that they didn't get awarded one.
They are getting one.
Yeah, but it's down the line, right? So they've got...
It's by 2027, which is a clause that wasn't included in the initial tender process. By 2027 probably means 2026, probably means a season and a half away. There are a lot of counties out there, I think, who are equally frustrated that there wasn't an option, that they weren't made aware at the outset that there was an option to enter at 2027. We'd got a couple of counties who'd have tailored their bids very differently, knowing where they currently sit financially or structurally, to better position themselves in 2027. You've only got to look at Glamorgan's response to the same awarding of Yorkshire, describe themselves as delighted. So it's not clear-cut by any stretch. Yorkshire, one of several counties who look at the criteria that were placed in front of them and thought they'd nailed them and couldn't believe they didn't get one. And so they weren't alone in that. And certainly Yorkshire would look at their record with Northern Diamonds as the co-hosts of them and say that they've done a pretty exemplary job, and that truthfully, if you ask a lot of the players across a lot of the different regions, whether the teams that have won the tenders are necessarily the teams that necessarily the counties that they would want to be at, I know for a fact that it wouldn't be unanimous in at least two or three of the cases. But equally, as I think a very fair argument, very fair counter argument to this that I've read a bit on social media, is that I don't really think first class counties have much but like to stand on here. They've had a lot of opportunity over the last 100 years to properly back their women's teams and haven't done, which was one of the reasons initially why this went to a regional setup. And then when this tender process was first announced, you got some county chiefs come out and say that they didn't think they could afford this. But suddenly, having not got them, everyone's putting out strong statements saying they should have got one. So I don't think it's that clear cut. I also don't think it's that clear cut to say we produce this player and this player and this player, because producing players in the amateur era is very different to producing players in the professional era and backing and properly backing those players and properly backing the environments they're in. So I think, I know that George's view is that every county that wants a tier one team, you know, why not give them all one? And I do sort of get that as well. I guess the ECB would look at finance, and I guess you'd also look at where are all those professional players coming from right now, given that there already be, essentially, in order to fill the 8 squads next year, professionals, we're already looking at 25, 30 new pros coming into next year for 8 teams. So it is complicated. I don't think the process has been done particularly well. But as I was saying with the hundreds, if you try and force through or push through really big decisions in the space of a month and a half, when you've got counties trying to sort of arrange them themselves, the best arrange themselves, and counties really, these decisions will be made by a few people at the club. You know, they're not enormous organisations. It's not easy. I don't think the process has been done particularly well. I think, but I don't think it's, yeah, but Yorkshire will have a team in a year, 2 years latest, which is far more than a few counties feel like they're going to get to. You know, if you take Gloucestershire, for example, who are one of three teams that co-own Western Storm or co-run Western Storm, Somerset got one, Glamorgan have been promised one, and Bristol, who have basically hosted all of their training for the last couple of years, add a load of their games, add where the players live, now feel like we sort of can't get one, because if you're trying to split this geographically, you can't have an entire region, you know, maybe you can, but you're unlikely to have an entire region with a professional team. So it's complicated. It is. There are a lot of strands to this, more so than to put out an angry statement and say that we deserve one, I think.
We are up against it. George, Harmy and Nick, anything else that you'd like to add to this week's show before we sign off?
I watched Ben Code for the first time, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and then I watched him again this week. And this isn't going to add much. He's really good. I've always just known him as this concept that takes wickets at 18s, 19s on the circuit, and somehow just never seen him bowl, I don't think. And it was just lovely.
He's a nice lad as well.
It was lovely to put a name and a face to a really mad set of first-class stats.
we had Rachel Hopkins on the following on yesterday on the Durham bid and everything that went with Durham. And Rachel speaks brilliantly anyway. She's a good communicator. But the process, she said, they went through with Tim Bostock, Marcus North. If I was on a panel, and I'm not just saying it because it's Durham, but I would believe in they're going to do the things the right way. I think Durham, being a first-class county for only sort of 30-odd years and the production line from an England point of view from the men's side, I think that I would hope that helped benefit Durham's cause going forward. And she spoke excellently. We had Anthony McGraw yesterday. He spoke brilliantly about the likes of Shane Snedner and their game. The one thing I will finish on is what a great game Sussex-Gloucester was. A lot of talk about Cookham Ball this week, a lot of talk about Duke Ball. For me, that was the perfect four-day match. You know, team bats first gets 417. Sussex went past Gloucester, 479. And then the spin bowlers came in with a tight finish. Some dodgy LBWs given in that game, I should say. But I think from a four-day game and what you want from a perfect four-day game, you know, nobody went on and got 100. I don't think there was any fifers. It was a good contribution from everybody. I thought that looked a very, very entertaining four-day cricket match for somebody who loves red ball and four-day first-class cricket in England.
Good stuff.
You'll see a lot of close games in Division 2 like that as well, because I think you really could choose any of the 8 to finish in the top 2 at the end of the season. particularly with Yorkshire slow start. I know they were tipped very heavily at the start, but winless through three. Any 2 of 8, I reckon. And John Simpson started brilliantly as captain there as well, at Sussex. Double hundreds, making a lot of clever decisions, enjoying it by all counts.
Guys, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time. George, you're off to Lords, aren't you, for the Antigua and Barbuda.
Am I seeing you there?
No, but you'll see Scott Taylor and Michelle St. Patrick Hewitt, who I'm sending for Talk Sports.
Rather peculiarly, I've double booked, so I'm hosting at the Lords and at the Oval.
At the Oval, yeah.
Might well wonder how I'm going to do that.
Could be a long afternoon drinking, George.
I'm not going to drink anything. I tell you, I'm going to be extremely... By the time this comes out, I'll either be hugely relieved or it'll be a catastrophe and I'll have got into hiding. And it could go either way right now. I'm very anxious about it. But anyway.
Right, you get out of here. We'll find out exactly what occurred at the Oval, London's premier cricket ground, and at the other lot. Next week, thanks for joining us here on TalkSport and via the Cricketer magazine. That was Steve Armisen, George Debeau, Nick Friend, myself, John Norman. And join us next week for Following On County Cricketer.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.